I will circle back to the Texans here in just a second, but I was if I was a little distracted in the previous segment, it's because on a personal note, people that listen to the show probably remember Charlie Davis, who is my daughter's boyfriend. They live together up in Boston. They've been dating for several years now, 5 years. We hope it's going in the direction it appears to be going in, which I think it is. He was on Survivor 46. He was on the 46th season of Survivor. This is probably, Seth, 2 years ago now almost, because they do two seasons a year. They're coming up on season 49 here shortly. And then season 50 is an all-star season where they invite people back from previous seasons, going all the way back to season one. They invite 20 or so contestants back to have an all-star season of Survivor. If you remember season 46, if you listen to this show or watch the show itself, Charlie was the runner-up. He looked like he was going to win the thing, and then last-second swerve, he ends up the runner-up in all of it. Still did a really good job, super proud of him, played the game fantastically. It was just announced on CBS Mornings just now by Jeff Probst of Survivor, the host of Survivor.
And from 46, it was a cruel summer when he lost in the final three. The question is, can he shake it off before Survivor 50? Charlie,
man. He's back. He's back for season 50 of Survivor.
Back up to the show.
Yes, he got the call.
That's right.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Sent him on the bus from Sugarland.
Yep.
It was just last year, by the way, Sean.
Was
May 22nd was the finale of the 2024 of the Survivor 46. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
You remember because they filmed it the previous summer.
Yep.
So it was two summers ago that they filmed it. But I didn't know anything about any of it really until we were watching. I became a Survivor fan, and I was going to watch every season after that.
I know.
Except I haven't watched a single episode.
I've only watched them because Amy's picked it back up now since Charlie's season. She loves reality shows. Like, she loves Big Brother. She loves The Bachelor shows, Dancing with the Stars, the whole thing. She watches all of them. So she's picked Survivor back up. That's right. Yeah, because they just finished 48 like last week. So that would make sense. 47 was in the wintertime, and then 48 just happened. So this will run next spring. But I know this, like Charlie and the rest of the cast, they're on planes today and tomorrow to go film this season 50. So my daughter and Charlie have known about this for a while. I hadn't been paying much attention. And then across my timeline this weekend, a video dropped. It just got curated onto my timeline or algorithmed onto my timeline. A video drops of a prediction of what the cast for season 50 was going to be. And I'm like, I'll click this. Maybe this person thinks Charlie's going to be on it. And they did. And then I went to Reddit and was looking at all the strings on Reddit of people who think they have spoilers and whatnot. And it turns out these spoilers were super accurate. The people who knew. And all of those had Charlie. So I haven't called my daughter. Now I've texted with her because it's been revealed. But everything Charlie's had to do relative to Survivor, she's had to sign a non-disclosure also. So once I saw that Charlie was probably going to be on this season of Survivor, I just shut down all communication with her. I didn't want to put
her... you didn't want to be prying.
Yeah.
You didn't want to be the dad that was prying for something, information,
possibly
to use for gambling.
Yep.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that.
That's got to be stressful as any kind of reality show producer when it comes to the non-disclosures or whatever they have to follow. You got to remember, in any given reality show, you're trying to have at least a few whack jobs on there.
Yes.
So, you've got colorful personalities. Charlie's strength was that he seemed to be one of the most sane of all of them.
Yeah.
So he was the opposite. They don't have to worry about his non-disclosure.
Yep.
I'm guessing that a full 25% of people who sign the disclosures on any given reality show have no idea what they're signing.
Right.
They're so far beyond the realm of normal human reasoning that they got to figure there's going to be leaks. So all those unnamed sources are coming from 100% the actual contestants.
I feel like you're describing Q, who was one of the contestants on Charlie's season, who also got invited back for season 50. And Q was a lunatic who voted against Charlie, by the way, on the final tribal jury voted against
and not
Trump.
Based on the way that Charlie played the game, but just for who was most deserving. It turned into a sob story about who is most deserving
of the
this
money.
This show that is all about like abandoning any of your better human instincts and to just be all about numero uno.
Yep.
And, like, it's just vicious. No ethics to it whatsoever.
Nope.
He decided to vote based on who is the fluffiest puppy that deserves the most milk.
Someone says on here, I don't know, Sean Houston. I think the Houston is the name of the texter. I don't know, Sean, to make it far in Survivor, you have to be good at lying to people. That is true. There were times during the season where Charlie was on there. I'm like, I sure hope you're not playing Judy right now the same way you're playing, Judy's my daughter, Maria or whoever on the show, you know?
And you had to be like, the person who nobody would ever suspect of cheating on their spouse, but who it turns out, like, they die and it turns out they had seven actual wives. And they just, because they were so diabolical in how they lied. So at the very least, Sean, you should appreciate that Charlie might be an effective sociopath.
Yeah.
If he was able to pull off the nice guy routine and yet still played the game, ended up betraying his closest ally in the game.
Yeah.
He was able to pull it all off.
If my daughter somehow benefits from that, then I'm cool with it. You know, like if
I can't imagine how that might benefit an attorney in his actual real.
He's an attorney
job.
In real life. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
I'm sure he's headed. He's going to be making seven figures per annum.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because when you win Survivor, you win $1 million. So that night that he lost in excruciating fashion, there was an element, not for me, like it's his million, but my daughter is obviously in a relationship with him. And I'm like, wow, that would have been a really nice nest egg to start your lives with that $1 million after, you know, whatever it is after taxes. He's still got $100,000, so that's good. So he got some money out of it. $100,000 is nothing to sneeze at. I'll have to ask Judy this. Like, I wonder, given the fact that Charlie is probably going to do very well in life, you know, he's 27 or whatever he is. He's a very successful lawyer. He'll do just fine. I do wonder if there's a dollar amount where he's cool with being the runner-up, because I think his story and the way he lost probably plays big into him getting invited back.
Yeah.
Where if he had won... Would he have rather won Survivor and not gotten invited back to this 50, or would he rather have gone through what he went through and gotten invited back to be with the best of the best to ever play it? You know, like, what is that? There is a dollar amount, but is it $900,000 would be my question. I don't know. But he's a Survivor junkie, so him getting invited back a second time.
He wants to win.
He wants to win,
He did a really good job with all the physical tests and everything because he actually trained for it.
Yeah, he's in shape.
He trained, right? He built all the games in his... he was like one of these guys that just totally... like He'd spent his whole life preparing for this one moment.
That's not an exaggeration.
It was like the Olympics for him.
It was. Yeah. He won the immunity challenge where you needed extreme hand strength. Like, you had to hold a pulley with a weight on it for the longest. And he held it for like over an hour. And I text Judy. I'm like, has he been preparing for that? And she sends me a picture of her sitting next to him in class. And he's got one of those hand gripper things.
Yeah.
Like, he had spent like time improving his grip. Because of that event, this is before he even got picked for Survivor. He was doing stuff like that.
That's an underrated moment, by the way. I don't know if you had any of those hand gripper things laying around when you were a kid, but a lot of people think, oh, the first time I put 45s on the bar for a bench, like, oh, yeah, I feel like I'm lifting real weight.
Yeah.
For me as a little kid, being able to actually squeeze one of those things completely, I can remember being like, I'm a man!
But with a much higher pitch.
You mess with it when you're like 4 years old and you can't even budget.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. It's a big step, man. It's a big step, the hand gripper.
It's a great moment in my life. It's like right just above getting married and having a child.
The gripper,
man. For the first time I gripped fully.
Full squeeze on the gripper. Text message, OMG, so excited. Charlie Survivor is the only one I've ever seen. My brother's a diehard watcher and auditioned once. I'll have to watch this one, Team Charlie. There you go. We're Team Charlie. It'll air sometime next spring, probably.
I was looking around on the application form for Survivor, and it says that they really would like more contestants who are 50 years old or older.
Yeah.
The audience really likes those, you know, especially if they're, doing well physically. I couldn't handle the heat, I don't think. Just some of those, man, I'd be a mess. I could handle the weight loss, but I'd get dehydrated at some point because I sweat so much and then I'd end up, I'd have to get like taken off the island on a helicopter.
Some of the things too, your sheer size, of just trying to get through some of the obstacle courses and stuff like that. That would be tough.
And any of the things like where you have to hang on a ledge or whatever, like those don't the big
for taller people.
The body weight hurts you on that stuff.
Yeah. And yet I would love to see you on that show. I think it would be awesome.
I'd flip out. No. That would be the worst version of myself. I'd be a star
because
I'd be acting so crazy.
Yeah.
But I'd be a star for all the wrong reasons.
It's because you can't eat. You know, like that's the thing. You need your nourishment, you know?
I would prep for it. I would go. I would prep for it the entire year beforehand by being in keto a whole bunch.
Oh, there you go.
That's the key, is teaching yourself to burn fat as efficiently as possible.
There you go.
But I don't know if that would be enough.
Yeah. All right, so there you go. That was the big news. Charlie, back in Survivor. Survivor 50. Go, Charlie. Jonathan Alexander had a piece.
Just one more thing about Charlie.
Yeah.
I'm just really thinking about this now. Yeah, he's got to be out for blood. He's going to win this one. Yeah, I can feel it.
That would be amazing.
He's had a year to regroup and focus, and he's probably never stopped training.
Yeah.
But now he needs to go off to Siberia for 3 weeks. He's got to take any pictures of Judy and get rid of them. Take them off the mirror,
until
weirdly at the very end of his training, Judy shows back up.
Oh.
Like Adrian did.
Yeah.
We're like, okay, Rocky has been just solely focused on beating Drago. He's eliminated all outside world distractions, takes the pictures of his family off the mirror, and then all of a sudden at the very end, she shows up.
Yeah.
That's a weak knee scenario there.
If Judy acts like Adrian did in those movies, I'm disowning her. Adrian, you can't win, Rocky. Like if Judy on Charlie's way out the door for some reason doesn't want him to fly to wherever they're filming this and do Survivor 50 and screams at him about how Q and Joe and all these other guys who I don't know in the cast. You can't win, Charlie. If she did that, I would disown her. If you're channeling Adrian, Judy, change your last name right now.
You know what Judy would do if she were Arian is that Charlie wins one of these challenges where he actually gets to read a letter from a loved one or something. So he reads a letter from Judy and it's an escape plan. We're like, we can get you out of there. I just don't know. Oops. You're never going to make it. We can get you out of there. Just be at this spot at the beach at 2 a.m.
Dude, don't do that.
You're going to die, Charlie.
She's a positive influence. Okay, now people are weighing in on you being on Survivor. Seth could stir up trouble and cause chaos, but could Seth sleep on bamboo, live off of coconuts, and poop in a hole without dude wipes? That's from Brent in the Heights.
Yeah, I could do all that stuff.
Yeah.
I trained myself to sleep on the floor recently. I had to spend a night in an airport, and I was disgusted with myself about how soft I was being. So I spent a couple weeks kind of easing myself into sleeping on a carpeted floor.
Did you really?
Yes.
That's
remember
amazing.
When I was really grumpy a few weeks ago? That was what I was doing.
That was when you were working on it.
Yeah.
Oh. All right. Well, hey, man, if that's something you want to accomplish, I'm here for the sacrifice. All right, real quick, let's get to this Jonathan Alexander. Are there any more players, Seth, that you would like the Texans to drop an extension on before the season starts? Because Jonathan Alexander has a list of possibilities and then ultimately kind of assesses whether or not they should do this sort of thing. I feel like the extension window is closed right now for the Texans, especially given what they're planning for in all likelihood next year with CJ and Will, the two most which will absolutely be the two most expensive contracts on the team. Where are you on this? Are there any, and you've got the list in front of you just like I do, are there any names on here you feel like, let's get this guy locked up for a little while?
No, there's nobody that I'm eager about. I already feel like the Texans are a little too aggressive in re-signing their own guys than I'm 100% comfortable with. Finding it hard to relinquish the old ways where, man, if you want to get an extension after 3 years, you better have been an MVP or something, or damn near close to it.
Yeah.
That times are a changing, but I still don't feel awesome. There's nobody else on the roster right now that I would feel awesome about giving an extension. Joe Mixon is one that it's going to get interesting after this season. He's signed through 2026, but he's an aging running back, and I think you can't. It's not like he had the kind of season where you give him a Saquon Barkley type reward.
No. I mean, and even at the contract he's at now, Jonathan points out he's a top 10 paid running back, even on the $8 or $9 million a year he's making right now. I think that the wild card with Joe Mixon is he is an influential voice in that locker room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's so So is that something where if he's going into a contract year and he wants a new deal that you're gonna have to deal with, you know?
CJ Gardner-Johnson's an interesting one because you trade for him, so he comes here on a contract, and you always wonder if a guy's going to be happy playing on the contract he's on or not.
Yeah.
The fact that he's been on four different teams with five different stays, is that the correct number?
Yeah.
I think there's something about you got to give it a year with him and just see exactly if there is a shelf life on CJ Gardner-Johnson or not.
Yep. Those are the names. Joe Mixon, CJ Gardner-Johnson, Christian Harris I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole and a contract extension right now. Unless they're really comfortable with his injury and you feel like you can get him at a discount because it wasn't just last season. He missed the first half of his rookie year, too.
The tough one, in a lot of ways, I would look at him almost like Brevin Jordan. Yeah. In that you've got a small sampling of what you think you can do with him. But, you know, Brevin Jordan was injured last year, and they ended up agreeing to an extension with him.
Yeah.
So there's upside there. But I feel like with Christian Harris, the ceiling for what he could potentially make if he starts for an entire season and plays and delivers on some of the promise that he showed 2 years ago, I think the upside for him is so high that it's unlikely that they come to terms.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if he ends up signing a deal that the Texans are comfortable with.
I think he becomes a free agent at some point, honestly. And then he lists Titus Howard. I would let that one play out as well.
The Christian Harris one, it's an interesting competition between him and Toa Toa.
Yeah.
That I think a lot of people aren't necessarily thinking about because Toa Toa ended up starting the whole year last year.
Mm-hmm.
Christian Harris, theoretically, I think, can be better in pass coverage than Henry Toa Toa probably has the ability to do. Christian Harris is just a different type of athlete. And that's where a lot of the competition is going to come during training camp is, all right, how do these guys look in coverage?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe some of these guys, you know, like Damian Pierce is one of them that Jonathan lists here. You know, some of these guys, they did it with Davis Mills. They did it with Brevin Jordan, as you mentioned. Just tack one, you know, if you get them and they've got a year left on their deal, tack one more year on at a reasonable amount if they're amenable to that. Like, I think part of getting a group of guys together like this, part of what you target in players, if the Texans, they are hyper-targeting things like love of football and chemistry and camaraderie, is you are more inclined to try to find some way to keep guys like that. And I don't know that that's always good. You fall in love with your own guys maybe a little too much sometimes. But we'll see. I will see. I think the extension window is closed, but maybe one of these guys gets something between now and the start of the season. All right, we mentioned this in the previous segment when we were talking about Raphael Stone and the Rockets. The love for Amen Thompson right now around the NBA just continues into the offseason where we even have one particular NBA voice answering, who is the next SGA? The answer, Amen Thompson. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Amen Thompson. We'll let you hear that. We'll hear from one of Amen's teammates as well. That's all coming up next. This text is good proof that I feel like you and I have each sort of carved out our brand with the audience, Seth. Let's be real. Watching Sean on Survivor would be 100 times more entertaining than watching Seth on Survivor. Now, Seth would be better at Survivor than me, there's no question, but what I'm gleaning from this text, faithful listener, is that you think I would be horrible at the immunity challenges, would probably last about 2 hours in the heat, eating bugs or fruit or coconut or whatever it is they eat off the trees there. And I will tell you this right now, you are 100% correct. I would be awful at Survivor. It would be a hilarious watch, but I promise you, I would only last one episode.
You think you'd be one of the first ones out?
I would try to be one of the first ones out.
The very
just
beginning
vote for
there,
me.
Yeah. The very beginning, it's all about how much value can you provide to your tribe.
Exactly.
And they might look at your weaving skills and fishing skills and everything and give a hard pass.
All the things I would pay other people to do for me if we were on, you know, back on the continental U.S.
You would have it. Your best shot would be to smuggle a whole bunch of stuff in there in your rectum and basically, you know, just be figure out who's the recovering alcoholic here. I'm going to bribe him with the travel bottles of booze I got on the plane on the ride here.
Sean is walking much funnier than he did in his tryout video. That is interesting.
Sean's gone off to go to the bathroom 6 times already and come back with trinkets every time.
Every time. It's weird. Trinkets would not be on an island somewhere. All right. So in case you're wondering why we're bringing that up, Charlie, my daughter's boyfriend, selected for Survivor 50, just announced on CBS Mornings an hour ago. All right. Amen Thompson. think he would do well on Survivor, I think. In good shape, good explosiveness, survival skills, pretty good. Amen Thompson is still one of the most beloved off-season figures. When it comes to sort of the rising stars right now in the NBA, it feels like Amen Thompson is on everybody's list. Him just now getting announced within the last week, first team all defense, I think, really hammers it home. Brian Windhorst was on, I believe it was GetUp yesterday. It was GetUp yesterday. And they had Adam Schefter on there for whatever reason, talking about basketball. They had the Morris twins on there. They asked the Morris twins and Brian Windhorst, who's the next Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? Who's the next guy to kind of rise and take the league by the throat? Here was Brian Windhorst's answer.
Let me give you a name of somebody that you should take and keep an eye on next year. And he's a twin. Amen Thompson from the Houston Rockets. He's not going to win MVP, but he is a guy that you should pay attention to. By the way, his twin brother, Asar Thompson from the Detroit Pistons, should be on your list. Amen Thompson just made first team all defense. He is going to get better offensively. He is a future all-star. He is a potential future franchise player in Houston or elsewhere, because if the Rockets are going to look to make any sort of major trade, any team is going to want him. So keep an eye on Amen Thompson.
Okay. That's Brian Windhorst talking right there. I agree. He's the one untouchable guy in this whole thing for me.
It seems like he is from various player podcasts and everything around the NBA. He's almost like that up-and-coming band that only the real music insiders know about. The people that have watched him play, and he catches their eye. Lots and lots of people keep noticing him. So it's almost always brought up as, hey, you know who you got to keep an eye on? We got like 70% of NBA players saying, hey, I'll clue you in on something.
That's,
you got to keep an eye on Amen Thompson.
Funny you say that. Hey, Ben, can you cue that Windhorst one up again? I'll tell you when to down cue it here. The way he leads into this is exactly what you're talking about.
Let me give you a name of somebody that you should take and keep an eye on next year.
Okay, bingo. That's all we need.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about this guy who might be the best player on the 2 seed in the Western Conference. Name is Amen Thompson, all right? Been watching this guy. He's like a garage band. He's going to be a big star.
I got a hunch about this guy.
He's going to be something.
Yeah, he was already recognized as a first-team all-star, defensive all-star, or defensive team. Yeah. But keep an eye on him.
Keep an eye on him, man. We'll get to Jock Lawndale here in just a second, Amen's teammate. I always love listening to people with Australian accents. It makes the cut at least 25% better. When I think of Amen, well, let's play Lawndale here, and I'll give you my main thought on Amen in a second. This was Jock Lawndale. I apologize. I have no idea what podcast this was, but he's talking to somebody else who appears to be Australian in this podcast, so maybe he's back home for the offseason now. But this is Amen Thompson's teammate, Jock Lawndale. Good assessment. I think some pretty funny anecdotes, too.
Amen Thompson's going to be an all-star next year. And if he's not an all-star next year, that's on him.
How many years has he been around for now?
2. That was his second year.
He'd be pushing for that most improved player award as well, wouldn't he, next year?
For sure.
You can see he's about to just explode.
Well, you forget that he only started starting, I think, when Jabari Smith Jr. went down with an injury, like 60 games into the year or 50 games into the year. So from there, he just blossomed. And it was like, oh, my God. Like, we knew that he was good, but I don't think anyone was like, holy shit. A lot of us at the end of last season were like, this dude's the future of the program.
Yeah, wow.
And then to see that kind of come to fruition, we were like, yeah, like this dude's
good bloke.
Unbelievable guy. And again, I do not compliment this guy to his face. I love to hang shit on Amen Thompson, and he knows it too. Like, we do this thing every time, you know, we go to give each other a high five, we pull our hands away at the last minute, and we try and like mess with the other person, you know, so I love messing with Amen, but he's a cracking bloke.
He's a cracking bloke.
Cracking bloke. Yeah.
Oh, he's a cracking bloke.
He's a cracking bloke. We got Steven Adams talking about the lads on the team.
Yeah.
We got to keep all of our foreign big men. We have to.
I think I came up with a new nickname for you. Cracker bloke.
That would be my rapper name.
He's my cracker bloke.
That would be my rapper name if I became a rapper.
My other bloke. Yeah, cracker bloke.
I'd be the cracker bloke. And I'd have all kinds of rappers on the cracker bloke podcast and everything.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I like
twerking on Steph's boat and everything. Oh, look at cracker bloke over there. Yeah.
Amen Thompson, at the end of last season, he was referencing is in 2024, the guys on the team were thinking, oh, man, this guy's really the real deal.
Yeah.
That's, the Amen Thompson dynamic, it's, It's one of those things where I feel like as appreciated as he is in Houston, I don't think it's fully hit how much of a found money delight like factor that could be. When you look back to the Golden, like the Warriors, and how well they drafted, they were homegrown, and it wasn't guys that were slam dunk. Oh yeah, this guy's the next superstar of the league.
Nope.
And yet they ended up with one of the greatest products ever. And by just drafting really, really well.
Yes. Well, he was the number four overall pick, but that was the Wembanyama draft.
Right.
And people thought that was a three-person draft. It was Wembanyama, Brandon Miller, if I'm remembering correctly, was the second pick, and I think Scoot Henderson was the third pick. And that was a draft where the narrative was, oh, you got to get one of these top three picks. And when the lottery came up and the Rockets were fourth, it was like, oh, can't catch a break, man. And don't get me wrong, like Wembanyama, assuming that whatever health issues he was dealing with are a thing of the past, is the future of the league. Like you call up the Spurs saying, we'll trade you Amen Thompson for Victor Wembanyama. They probably hang up. But Amen Thompson is going to be a great player in this league. And I think he's probably going to end up being better than the two guys that got taken ahead of him. And that just goes to show. Sometimes the lottery, like the night of the lottery, you look and you go, well, boy, we can't catch a break. And the fact of the matter was, if you were picking two or three, you probably wouldn't have picked Amen Thompson in that draft, you know, just by the way that was going. So you're absolutely right about that. The Jabari thing is interesting that Londale brought up, that what got Amen into the starting lineup, it took Jabari Smith Jr. breaking his hand for Amen Thompson to get bumped up from being a sixth man to getting 40 minutes a night in the starting lineup. And it makes you wonder, like, how long would that, you know, would that have ever happened this year? Or would he have just been along with Tari, the two? He and Tari are the original Terror twins, not Jabari and Tari.
I should be more. I need to be retroactively livid with Udoka for waiting as long as he did to and having his hand forced on that. I don't know if I can trust this organization anymore.
The other thing Londale said, the host that he was with said that Amen would be, he's a guy who could be most improved next year. Now, look, it's hard to win most improved when you're already thought to be one of the five best on one side of the basketball. You know, you're already thought to be one of the five best defensive players in the league. You've got no room for improvement defensively. I guess, Seth, if all of a sudden Amen Thompson became a 20-point a night guy, like if all of a sudden offensively he was somebody you really had to account for. You don't super hyper have to account for Amen Thompson offensively the way you do somebody who's got consistent range on their jump shot, you know?
And that's where, I mean, just getting a way to get some space into this offense and everything else, whether it's just by adding shooters or however you do it, or by adding a superstar in Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
I mean, some of what Rafael Stone was talking about in the clips we played of just not being so solely focused on the one individual. It's a team effect.
Yep, no doubt. Text messages coming in. Great program by the two of you. You talk like two GMs. Football is a business. Your conversation reminds us of this reality. Again, great show. I thank the texter for that compliment. I don't read it for self-gratification. I read it to point out to that texter that sometimes that view gets us portrayed as the responsible curmudgeons on the station.
Yeah,
we're not the ones out there making it rain the first day of free agency.
When I wasn't ready to fire Nick Caserio based on the first 2 hours of day one of free agency in 2024, I was an old man, don't you know? It's all about the .coms these days.
Yeah.
Perfumania, that's the stock I'm buying.
All these kids on the Soch. Yeah. So thank you for the nice compliment, but just know that it's a blessing and a curse. Having the responsible point of view that Seth and I have about contracts and the salary cap gets us in trouble with the hot take community sometimes. Okay,
it's a stupid way to dig for ratings.
The hourglass is dripping out of sand on the two of us right now because of that. And the fact
the podcast listeners love you. Yeah, I know. Yeah. They're the people that they buy stuff. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. 2 hours in the heat for you is a stretch, Pendergast. It is. No, I was giving myself too much credit saying I survived 2 hours in the heat.
You did a good job at spring training. You sat down in the sun with no hat on your head.
Yep.
Your bald head.
Yep.
When you were just wanted to get video footage of Altuve in left field for the first time in spring training. And it was kind of hot that day.
It was hot that day. Yeah.
I was sitting up in the shade drinking one of those mojitos that's like a triple mojito in a can.
Yeah, those were good. Those were good.
Made for good social media content. That's what it's all about.
I forgot about that, man. Yeah, I did. I stuck it out. And boy, every time we thought he was coming out of the game, he kept staying in because he didn't get a ball hit to him the entire time.
Yeah.
He was supposed to play like four innings. Like, here he comes back out for the fifth. I'm like, ah.
He might have missed his tee time.
Slathering more sunscreen. Yeah.
That's how much he cares. He sacrificed the potential tee time.
That's right.
To stay out there. So those of you who don't know, in spring training, when the starters leave, they just leave. There's no hanging around the clubhouse or anything. Yeah.
He didn't even go back to the dugout. He walked out through the bullpen in the outfield. He didn't go back to say goodbye to anybody. There were no scraps in his scrapbook. Altuve, innings over, he just turns around back and walks backwards, basically. Instead of going in towards the diamond, he walks through the wall. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Keep texting, 713-572-4610. Getting some good amen texts. We'll read some of those. All right, I am the same. A future Hall of Famer had this to say about a Super Bowl that he lost. Happened to be right in a building I can see out the window right now. This guy handles losses the exact same way I do. Do you handle it the same way that this particular player does? We've got the audio. We've got that for you. Coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Well, I'm guessing OTAs are supposed to start at 9:30 today, and I'm guessing they will. I am 100% guessing they're going to be indoors. It is nasty out there today, boy. It is raining fierce, so probably indoors today. But we'll have eyes on it for you here on Sports Radio 610. Texans OTAs getting cranked up. Before you know it, it'll be mini camp, and next thing you know, yada, yada, yada. Training camp will be here, and this is going to be a fun season. Keep it tuned to Sports Radio 610. All right, I saw this cut yesterday, Seth, from Julio Jones. Julio Jones, future Hall of Famer. Of course, Atlanta Falcon, just an amazing player for the Atlanta Falcons for many, many years, including 2016 when the Atlanta Falcons made it all the way to the 2017 Super Bowl here at NRG Stadium in Houston. We all remember that one. 28-3, the Falcons are up. Just run the football a couple of times and you probably end up winning that game. You run the clock out. But Julio Jones was on a podcast, looked to be with maybe a couple of his former teammates or guys he played with. I couldn't tell who he was talking to in this particular clip. But I watched this, and I can totally relate from this standpoint. When a team I root for loses a game that's that catastrophic in nature, I do the same thing Julio Jones does. I do not watch that game ever again.
Mm-hmm. Man, about the Super Bowl, I have yet to go back and watch it.
Oh, the game?
Yeah, I haven't went back to watch the game. And two, like, for me, just like in that game, it was just like I had four opportunities in that game. In that whole game too, though, like all this, you know, what I've done and, you know, as the team and we got to the Super Bowl, it's just like I had four opportunities.
Bro, that one catch you had on the sideline.
I had four opportunities though the whole game. That's insane.
That is
four
ridiculous.
Targets in the Super Bowl.
No, that's ridiculous.
But, you know, again, I did what was asked of me.
That's some bitterness right there, man.
Oh, yeah, is that a shot at Kyle Shanahan?
It's a shot at somebody.
Yeah, so Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator. Yeah. After that game, he would accept the job with the 49ers, and that's all she wrote.
And the rest
I totally agree. I would guess the majority of Super Bowl losers never go back and watch the whole game.
Yeah. I wouldn't. I can't. When teams I watch lose games like that, I don't go back. I've never watched a single game. Like, when the Astros lose the World Series, I can't even go back and watch the Altuve home run that got them to the World Series because they lost the World Series. You know what
I
mean? Like, the whole offseason.
You can't enjoy any part of it.
I can't enjoy any part of it because, you know, especially when you lose and you're the favorite. You know, the Astros are such a heavy favorite to the Nationals. And I don't know. In that Super Bowl, I don't know that the Falcons, I can't remember they were the favorite or the underdog. I'm guessing they were the underdog because you're going against Belichick, who at that point had won four Super Bowls as the coach of the Patriots, but you're up 28-3 like that. It was an all-time choke job. Like, I don't know how you can go back. I am guessing that there are no Oiler fans virtually who have gone back to rewatch the 35-3 game against the Buffalo Bills. Who wants to relive that?
Every now and then you might watch it. They've done enough little documentaries on it on YouTube and what have you. You've
That's
probably
fair.
Done that.
Yeah.
You want to go back and if you had a version of the whole game, I doubt you're watching it.
That thing, it's you probably, burn that thing.
The entire game might be on YouTube. They do leave the NFL YouTube channel to have some of the classic games up there. So if you feel like punishing yourself before the Astros game starts, go ahead and watch that.
Do you? That would be the hard part of being a football player. Like, when you were on a team that was losing, did it suck going to watch film? Like, on
Well, no, the worst, yeah, it always sucks when you're, yeah, I mean, that's, but, and then you go through waves where the coaches are trying to figure out, all right, well, maybe we need to be extra nice to these
tough
guys.
Tough love.
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
No, not tough love. Like, okay, we need to be nice to them.
Yeah.
Because everybody else is beating them down. But then you can tell that they don't mean it when they compliment you. Yeah. No, but the hardest thing is the next year after games like this, let's say the Falcons had played the Patriots and had the same coordinator and everything. The next year, they keep showing up in the cut-ups. The hardest thing to watch in film is, let's say you're preparing for the Titans. It's for the first time in 2025. And it's, when do they play them for the first time this year?
Week four. Yeah.
Yeah, week four. All right. So it's week four. And, since the last disappointing Titans game, some other things have happened. But then all of a sudden, there you are. 8 months later, watching yourself screw up against the Titans from last year.
Because
you're watching the film and the cut-ups and everything and try to figure out. Yeah. So you get to relive your mistakes over again.
Yeah.
So if it happened in a Super Bowl, you'd be watching. Those would be part of the cut-ups, and you'd have to watch your bad plays from one of the worst games you ever played in.
One of the worst choke jobs that your team was ever involved in.
Patriots were a 3-point favorite Falcons.
That sounds about right. That sounds in neutral field. That sounds about right. And I'm looking right now. Yeah, Julio Jones is right, man. Chapter and verse. 4 targets. Now, 4 catches on 4 targets. Mm-hmm. That might make me even angrier. Like, hey, look, man, everything you're throwing my way, I'm catching. And whoever he was doing that podcast with, that's the first thing I think of when I think of Julio Jones in that Super Bowl. He had a catch along the sidelines on, I don't think it was a go route, but it was, you know, probably about a 25-yard catch down the sideline where he – I mean, it was something else, man. It was one of those catches like, all right, there's 5 guys on the planet that can make that catch. But, boy, he is still carrying that around with him, man. In that game, Taylor Gabriel and Austin Hooper had more targets than Julio Jones did in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's a shot at Kyle Shanahan. I give Julio credit for not just naming Kyle Shanahan by name.
Yeah. Yeah, they only threw 23 passes in that game, the Falcons did. But they were throwing them at all the wrong times.
They were throwing them exactly when you didn't want to pass all game long, but now here at the end, when we don't need to, that's when you want to just release the hounds.
It is crazy. In a game where their offense averaged 5.8 yards per carry, they rushed 18 times for 104 yards. God, maybe what jumps out is how few plays they ran. For a team that scored 28 points, they threw the ball 23 times and ran it 18 times. That's 41 plays. Plus 5 sacks. That's 46 plays. That's nothing.
Well, they were running the type of strategy, because they were soaking up clock and everything. Exactly what you should do when they knew how to manage the game while they had a lead.
Yeah.
And yet at the very end, just couldn't take the foot off the gas.
They averaged 12.3 yards per completion or per attempt. 23 attempts for 284 yards. Your quarterback had a 144 passer rating, and you lose that game. Like, that's just, I mean, it's weird to say, like, in that game, not to rehash the Super Bowl from 8 years ago, but, like, just looking at it now, like, it's weird to think, like, you look at the box score, you go, well, the offense didn't lose the game, but then you look at it, you go back and watch a game, you're like, well, yeah, they did. They couldn't grind the clock out at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Kept giving the ball back to the New England Patriots. So, anyways, I say all this to say, I play that audio to say, I am a lot like Julio Jones. If my team loses a catastrophic loss, the tape gets burnt, and I never, ever watch it again. I feel you, Julio Jones. Amen Thompson, this is Ocho weighing in. Amen Thompson will need to make some meteoric improvements in multiple areas offensively to meet the expectations that we were just talking about. I don't know if they were expectations or just what he would have to do. If he were to get into the most improved player conversation, it's going to be largely based on him making a huge leap as an offensive player. Ocho does say it would be something to behold. Yeah, Amen Thompson becoming a dangerous, dangerous offensive player should scare the hell out of the rest of the league if he's able to do that. I think a lot of it can get accomplished just with the repetition of shooting a bunch of elbow jumpers and three-pointers in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he
mm-hmm.
just needs to become a more consistent shooter of the basketball.
He's, I think in terms of like how you feel about the upside, and some of this just comes from the nature of how he plays, you feel like he's the guy that just flat out wants it more than a lot of other promising young NBA players.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard not to envision him just steadily getting better every year and improving on something.
Yep.
Now, they, everybody works hard. Everybody does summer league, all of that. But there's just his mode of operation is just 1,000 miles per hour all the time.
Yep. Text message. This goes back to the Astros. We'll hit the Astros in the next segment. Sean, I agree. Let Dubon have a shot at being the everyday second baseman, and DeCenzo can be the new utility guy. Dubon's playing at a level now offensively. He's on a streak enough now where I'm like, yeah, don't jerk around with second base anymore. Let Dubon be your second baseman. Keep Altuve in left field if you want to. The issue.
They turned that first double play they turned to last night. Peña kind of had an awkward throw to Dubon, who was running towards second base. So for Dubon to be able to handle that throw and then handle that catch and then make the throw to first, he doesn't do it as impressively as Peña in terms of how it looks, but he just flat out gets the job done.
It was smooth, man. That was smooth, and the guy was out by like three steps. Like the transfer from glove to hand to Walker was something to watch, man. So yeah, I'm cool. We'll see what the lineup is today. It's a day game after a night game, so maybe they're doing some, you know, maybe I'm guessing Caratini's going to be in the lineup today because you're not going to have Yiner catching again on a day game. That day game, that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, the story
say
for
day gay. I know I said day gay, Ben. You're laughing in there. I meant day game. Yeah, yeah.
The story for today's game is Lance McCullers. And just, yes. All right, just keep stacking another one on. So Lance McCullers versus, I think, Severino is pitching for the A's. If he goes six innings, I'll have a ticker tape parade in my own
house. That was my question. Okay, you made the bold prediction on Hunter Brown.
I'll get out the old dot matrix printer. Yeah.
Are you making a bold prediction on how many innings he's going to pitch? I know you're hoping for six.
I'm not going to make a – let's see. I'm going to – versus the A's especially.
Yeah.
He goes six innings today.
Six innings?
Yes.
Guy hasn't gone five yet.
That's my bold prediction.
That is a bold prediction. I will give you that. That's bold as hell. Yes. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a on a Wednesday. Stay safe out there. The weather is nasty. Let's circle back to the Astros and last night's game. Altuve, since last Thursday, we're still waiting for the thank you text from all of you about lighting a fire under Altuve. Seth has an interesting question. Why this version of Jake Myers, or an assessment maybe, why this version of Jake Myers, this one, the one that a year ago expired on May 31st, why might this one stick around? And boy, the impact it would have if it does. We'll have that for you as well coming up in the next segment. Stay there.